Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Thanks to the high gas prices and, of course, very crowded skies, more people are hopping on the train. Now, Amtrak says ridership has spiked 14% since last year. But now many trains are overcrowded, and Amtrak says they need an infusion of cash, big cash, to help meet the growing demand. Joining us now to talk about what direction Amtrak is going in is Robert Buzz Paswell, director of the University Transportation Research Center at City College, and a former head of the Chicago Transportation Authority. Robert was last on the show to talk about MTA leadership in transit negotiations. Robert, good morning. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to be back.
So you're not surprised at Amtrak ridership is up, correct?
No, I think no one is surprised that it's up. In fact, it's spiking more since the gasoline prices have gone up. But Amtrak, with Congress's help, is in for some good infusions of funds and some changes in some of its operating procedures. In the House, Congressman Oberstar and Mica, Republican, Oberstar, mm-hmm. a Democrat, have put together a bill that's going to try to put $61 billion worth of capital and operating money into Amtrak by 2015, which means for the first time in a long time, it'll have a continuing source of support for much-needed programs to upgrade and renew the lines basically all across the country, and especially in the most crowded corridors, of which people in New York know they're part of.
Certainly, and actually we should just get to that immediately. The Northeast Corridor has long been one of the most popular routes, and not to suggest that Congress would be self-interested necessarily, but that New York to Washington shuttle is certainly one of the most popular. Where are we seeing real congestion in the country?
Well, on the Northeast Corridor for probably about the last 8 or 9 years, in terms of the share of people commuting between New York and Washington, maybe a dozen years ago, the airline shuttles held the majority of the riders. But about 10 years ago, that shifted to Amtrak, both through pricing and the introduction of a cell and more aggressive service. And now Amtrak is picking up more. To the extent now where the person who goes to Washington is on a, I don't want to say a daily commute, but for a daily trip, I go down there often for meetings or for working with the Department of Transportation, find that if I schedule, let's say, a 5 o'clock train back and I get done at 4 o'clock and I want to get on it, it's totally booked. And so it's wonderful for Amtrak. It shows basically that the need for capacity is increasing. And the Northeast Corridor isn't only just New York to Washington, centric as we New Yorkers are, but I think New Yorkers also have to think about New York-Boston, and particularly in New York State, New York to Albany, which is a critical corridor and presents problems of its own. Because the New York to Albany route is not only Amtrak, but it's Metro North and it's freight railroad. So we begin to see there are a number of not only money problems that are involved mm-hmm. with addressing Amtrak, but operating issues as well.
Well, I think we're going to have listeners with quite a few questions for you, so I want to give out that number, 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. I'm speaking with Robert Buzz Paswell, a former head of the Chicago Transportation Authority, and we're talking about increasing ridership on Amtrak. If you've been on a train lately, you've probably noticed. Buzz, just getting back to this idea of growing demand. So if they're struggling to maintain current service levels, what are the challenges? Obviously, equipment. What about rail track upgrades?
On the Northeast Corridor, a number of things have to be done. They have to continue to replace and modernize the rail where there's wooden ties, continue to replace them with concrete ties for smoother rides and more continuous rides. They're slowly replacing the catenary, the electric wire that's overhead that serves the whole Northeast Corridor, which is not only, as we know in New York, not just Amtrak, but New Jersey Transit, and with hundreds of trips a day, we need to modernize and provide better power sources. So that's and refurbished stations, improved ticketing, improved information about trains. You know, it's the same things we want on our subways. When is the next train coming? We want with more reliability. That we also know that on a separate issue, that Penn Station is supposed to be remodernized, and that's sort of been in abeyance for a long time. But along with improving the system itself, we need to improve access to the system. The Europeans noted this, after World War II, and the investment in rail, even though people were going to the car, investment in rail was significant. The governments knew that they had to co-invest. They couldn't just leave it to the, there were no private railroads, but when England tried to privatize, that didn't work, and they just couldn't leave the railroads sort of up to their own devices. It needed infusion. It needed long-term planning. To the extent in Europe, and that's probably a good model for the United States, the European Union has railroad agreements so that whether you're in Germany or France or Spain or Greece, you provide your own rail trains in the country. But there are also operating rules, speeds of trains, type of equipment, who has rights of way, the kinds of things that would make a diverse system, country by country, right. And in this country, state by state, a more united and uniform system.
Well, not to mention another argument, perhaps against privatization, is that security issues post 9/11, and the fact that transportation and rails are as much a security concern as anything else that's moving in and around the country right now.
Well, there are no question about security. My colleague, Dr. Hogan Veris, and I did a study for the National Science Foundation right after 9/11, looking at people's response to travel after 9/11. We found that people greatly preferred the railroad to flying. Obviously, right after 9/11, the reasons were obvious. But that's stayed in place. Is that part of the boost of railroads? Is that people now sort of feel more secure on railroads than flying. And I think one thing that's going to come to Amtrak's aid is the fact that the airlines now are in such fragile shape as they charge more for pillows or drinks, or they make you wait 2 hours online mm-hmm. to go through security. If you're going to travel less than 500 miles, and if a railroad exists, you're going to say, let me take the train.
We've got a caller on the line, Simon from New Hyde Park. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
Morning. Hi. I had an interesting experience just a couple of months ago because I thought that it'd be better just to take the train. Besides that, I enjoy train rides to a trip to Cincinnati, but it wasn't really like the greatest experience because on the way out there I took a bus because the trains only run three times a week, which maybe I can understand, but the bus itself was just highly delayed and then just not very comfortable. So I figured on the way back I'd have a better experience in the train, but the what was supposed to be an 18-hour train ride, first of all, ended up being about 23 hours on a train. Because there are many delays along the way. They said the reason why is that there are rules in the different states that freight trains and passenger trains can't pass at the same time. So we had to stop for the freight trains.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I let's say like this, like I'm not a policymaker. I can't argue against things, and if that's reasonable, then that's fine by me. But then it just goes to show for me that train travel isn't very convenient or not really much of a good option in within the U.S.
Yeah, let me
thanks, Simon.
Let me just say a word about that. And that is a big issue.
Delays, yeah.
The conflict between passenger and freight when they share right away. In theory and by law, passenger trains always have the right of way, and that's by agreement. In practice, freight trains ignore that. And one of the highlights of the Michael Oberstar bill is that they want to have mediation at the federal level for these conflicts and make sure that the passenger trains regain the right of way. It happens not only near Cincinnati. It happens a lot of times when you go from New York to Albany or from New York to Boston. So this is a major issue. It's an issue where the freight trains have had such power in the country. You know, the railroads have had such power in the country, and Amtrak has had such little power. The last 20 years of history of Amtrak, always trying to be downsized and fighting for its life, that it's been tough for it to be heard in these disputes. And this new bill that's about to be signed recognizes this and puts it right on the front table, saying if we're going to have good passenger service, passenger trains must have the right-of-ways in the corridors that they operate.
Sure. And, you know, one thing I'd mentioned the last caller, too, is just the efficacy of trains, in that at least in thunderstorms and in rain, at least trains are going to take off or, you know, not have the kind of congestions that you experience in these three major airports in New York anyways. We've got another caller on the line. I'm Alice Rehan for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking to Buzz Paswell about increased ridership on Amtrak. We've got Sam on the phone. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. What I've never understood is the concept that Amtrak is supposed to pay its way. We never ask Route 95 to pay its way. We never ask the airports to pay its way. And they're all publicly built, publicly operated, and air traffic control is provided. And as a matter of fact, the railroads in this country were built on land grants of alternate sections of land. So why don't we own the railroad bed and then lease the option for people to use it, just like we do the highways? If you want to operate freight transport on the highway, you pay a tax, you buy your tags for your vehicle, for your truck, and you operate. Why don't we act the same way with regard to railroads?
Great question. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah.
Buzz, why don't you take that?
Okay. Well, you know, the separation of infrastructure from operations was tried in England with great disaster, as you know. They had rail track, which operated all the rails and the signals and the switches, and then any company could bid to provide service between any of the cities in England. And that was one of these great Thatcher programs. And, of course, many accidents in which numbers of people were killed later, and plus the unbelievable debt that Railtrack piled up, forced Railtrack to go back under control of the government. That isn't to say that you can't separate the idea of operating the rail bed and the infrastructure and having train operations over it, but the first premise that you had is at the heart of everything. We basically underwrite nationally, as national policy, our airlines, our ships, our national, you know, the merchant marine. We certainly the highways, the trucking industry. We've backed off from the railroads, and especially passenger rail. And it just, at a time like this, it doesn't make sense. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, not at all. Thank you so much. I've been speaking with Buzz Paswell from the City College. And up next, we'll talk about urban farming and literally farming up the side of a skyscraper. That's up next.